All right, good morning, everyone. Let's begin. So we find ourselves this week. I apologize. I mislabeled number one. We're not up to Kapitel Lamed Beis. We're actually up to Kapitel Lamed Gimel. So we find ourselves again this week, beginning chapter 33 in Sefer Tehillim. So this, of course, is a kapitel that many of you may recognize. It's a kapitel that's actually part of Shabbos morning davening. And we're going to see it's going to be a kapitel that is a very dramatic departure from most of the kapitlach that we have studied up until this point in time. So we're not going to go through the whole thing. Let's just begin with the first two or three psukim. Raninu tzadikim ba'ashem, la'isharim na'avo sehila. We'll just use English translation here. Sing joyously to the Lord, you righteous ones. It is fitting for the upright to offer praise. Hodu la'ashem b'chinor, b'neva asor zamru lo. Extol the Lord with a harp. Sing to him with a 10-stringed lyre. Shiru la Hashem shir chadash, heitivu nagin bisrua. Sing to Hashem a new song. Play well with sounds of jubilation. Ki yashar dvar Hashem v'cho ma'aseyu be'emuna. For the word of the Lord is just, all his deeds are done in faithfulness. So why is this kapitel a dramatic departure from our previous kapitlach? It's happy, right? It's happy. Remember, again, the truth is, for the most part, the first 32 kapitlach of Sefer Tehillim, although, again, there are differences in each every kapitel, the truth is, are really all about struggle, are about difficulty, are about loss, are about sadness, are about tragedy. But here, what's fascinating is, in Kapitel Lamed Gimel, this is actually an upbeat kapitel. This is happiness, this is joy, this is celebration. This is, you see, remember, David HaMelech many times has rejoiced in the salvation of God. But that salvation always came on the heels of some type of tragic circumstances. In this particular kapitel, David HaMelech is rejoicing about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but yet it does not seem to be in the aftermath of any kind of difficulty or any type of tragedy. Which also, by the way, helps understand why it's part of Shabbos morning davening. This is part of Shabbos morning Pesukei Dezimra, because obviously on Shabbos we know, it's not our topic for today, but it's interesting to note the difference that on Shabbos, remember again, even if Rachmana Litzlan, a person is observing Avelos, a person, God forbid, is observing Shiva, so we know that at least on Shabbos, the external displays of mourning are lifted. The Avelos still applies, but external behavioral manifestations of mourning are simply put in abeyance, simply set aside until the conclusion of Shabbos. So the fact that this kapitel is a part of Pesukei Dezimra on Shabbos morning just seems to really solidify the fact that the overtone of it is one of incredible simcha, one of incredible jubilation. Which of course leads us to the fundamental question. Remember, we always try to explore what is happening over here. So meaning, what's the background to this kapitel? So if you look at number two, Rav Shamshon Nofal Hirsch, before we get to the background of it, Rav Hirsch, we'll see more of background next week, really. Rav Hirsch focuses on this word raninu, which we translate as sing joyously. So Rav Hirsch understands it a little bit differently. If you look at number two, he says, the shoresh ranan, resh nun nun, is employed to express the articulation of powerful emotions and thoughts evoked by some external stimulus. The fact that patzach, the bursting forth of emotions that clamor for expression, frequently occurs with ranan, and never in combination with another word except ranan, would support this interpretation. And he gives a couple of other examples of this. Skip down to paragraph B. He says, the PL form, ranan, resh nun nun, as used in this verse, occurs only in connection with joyous emotions. There is a saying of the sages in the Medrash stating that it is said Ranenu Tzadikim Bashem and not Ranenu Tzadikim El Hashem. Now, what the first points out over is something very interesting. It should have said Ranenu Tzadikim, sing to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It doesn't say sing to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, rather Ranenu Tzadikim Bahashem. Sing. You see, it's actually interesting because you notice the English we used here says sing joyously to the Lord. It's not really what it means. It means sing joyously what? In the Lord, or with the Lord, right? So what does that mean? There is a saying in the sages, one more time, that Medrash, Ranenu Tzadikim Bahashem, and not Ranenu Tzadikim El Hashem, says the Medrash, Bizman Shehin Roin, because when the righteous see HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Miyad Miraninin. they immediately go ahead and sing. For it is an outpouring of emotions evoked by the sight of the Lord. So what Rav Hirsch says over here is two fascinating things. Number one is this idea that Ranenu doesn't just mean sing. Ranenu means this incredible bursting forth of emotion. You know, there are times in life where a person feels such an acute sense of simcha, such an acute sense of joy, that, well, often, it's actually interesting, very often an acute feeling of joy manifests itself how? In tears, which of course is very interesting. Maybe we'll touch on that. That's a fascinating. Arizal discusses why that is. That why happiness expresses itself in the same way that sadness expresses itself. But not for today. In any event, so there are some forms of joy that are so intense that they simply burst forth. A person can't contain it. So if Hirsch says, Ranenu doesn't just mean sing, and Ranenu doesn't just mean sing joyously, Ranenu means a feeling of happiness that is so profoundly intense that it almost spills out of the individual. Rav Hirsch also tells us, so why? Like, what's happening over here? Where is this Ranenu? Where is this incredible spilling out of joy coming from? So he says, it's a result ultimately of beholding God. That when a person is able to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a person is able to experience HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that leads a person to such a profound sense of joy. Ranenu tzadikim b'Hashem. Not to Hashem. I'm not praying to God in this capital, says Rav Hirsch. Rather, when I have an experience in God, or better stated, when I experience God, what happens? Ranenu. There's incredible joyousness. So just, I want to point out something very interesting, which is even before we go on to discuss what that means, what David HaMelech is already teaching us is something very profound, which is true joy in life only comes from a connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this is a very important episode because many of us go through life trying to find happiness. And often it eludes us. And that is because we are often looking for happiness, as they say, in all the wrong places, right? Again, you could find joy in many things. You could find many things are pleasurable in nature. But if you're looking for true happiness in life only comes, Ranenu tzadikim b'Hashem, only comes, and this is true, because we know, many of us, if we reflect on our lives, some of the happiest moments that we've had in our lives are spiritual moments. It doesn't mean they're spiritual moments just me and God. They could be spiritual moments that I experience with a spouse, spiritual moments that I experience with a child. They can involve other people. But the happiest moments in life are ones in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself is present, right? Ultimately, a person is privileged to bring a child into this world, and a person is able to hold that child in the first few moments of life. So there's nothing that could even describe the enormity of a moment like that. It's not just because I've been given a new child. It's because I feel that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with me. Like Shlosha Shutfin Ba'adam, there are three partners. I've directly partnered with God in the creation of human life. And you could plug that into so many different experiences. So just lesson number one that David HaMelech is teaching us is if you want to be happy, if you want happiness in life, you have to be with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You have to experience God. So the question now that we have to focus on a little bit is, the way Rav Hirsch set this up, is that what David HaMelech is describing over here is an incredible outpouring of joy as a result of being b'Hashem, as a result of perceiving or seeing God. So the question is, so what's the God perception that he's referring to over here? So if you go back up to number one for just a moment, so I want to point out something very interesting to you, which is that David HaMelech spends a good amount of time in this capital talking about the natural world. So go back to number one for just a moment. Number one, Pasuk Vav. One, number one, verse six. Bidvar Hashem Shamayim Nasu, Uberuach Piv Kol Tzva'am. By the word of the Lord, the heavens were made, and by the breath of his mouth, all their hosts. Koneis Kaneid Mehayom. No sin ba'otzaros tohamos. Similarly, he goes on. He gathers the waters of the sea like a mound. He places the deep waters in vaults. So you see, and David HaMelech does this a few other times throughout this capital, where David HaMelech constantly makes reference to the natural world. So perhaps what David HaMelech is saying over here, Ranenu tzadikim b'Hashem. So David, and remember, according to Rav Hirsch, There's nothing particular happening in David's life right now. This is David HaMelech just telling us a little bit about his experience with God. So, Ra'anu Tzadikim Ba'Hashem. So there are times when the righteous experience God. The righteous feel so overwhelmed by God. The righteous feel so connected with God. In those times, literally my heart overflows with ecstatic joy about being close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When do we have those moments? David HaMelech suggests, when do we have those moments? When we experience nature. Take a look at number three. So the Rambam writes something very interesting. So the Rambam says, V'heichi aderech la'avos liraso. Now remember, in the beginning of Hilchos Yisodi HaTorah, so the Rambam writes that, and this is actually, the truth is, it's a shir by itself because it's really very interesting. The Rambam writes that a person has to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? We say it every single day in Shema, V'yahavtas Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavecha u'b'chol nafshecha b'chol ma'odecha. I have to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu with all of my heart, all of my soul, and all of my means. So first of all, just the notion of being mandated to love God is an interesting thing. You generally can't legislate or mandate love. The fact that the Torah does legislate it indicates to me that love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu is something that's innate. I don't have to learn it. I don't have to acquire it. It's there. I just have to discover it within me. So the Rambam writes something very interesting. I probably should have put this on the sheet. The Rambam writes that a person has to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and this is amazing, as a man loves a woman. That's the Rambam's Lashon. As a man, so what does it mean as a man loves a woman? He says, just like if a man falls in love with a woman, so he thinks about her all the time, he's preoccupied with her, she's always on his mind. So he says, so too, that's what loving HaKadosh Baruch Hu means as well. Loving HaKadosh Baruch Hu means that as well. That ultimately, again, that a person is constantly preoccupied with the Ribono Shel Olam. That wherever I am, whatever I'm doing, he's always on my mind. Which, of course, is so interesting because the Rambam is saying, I've mentioned this before, that you know our greatest problem with God, if we're honest, our greatest problem with our God relationship is what? No one here knows. Our greatest, not that we can't see him, because we're going to see, our greatest problem with God is that the truth is, we say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shel Olam, I love you so much, but I'm just not ready to settle down. I think we should see other people. I love you. I don't want you to, I have incredibly strong, I've never loved anyone like I've loved you, but I don't know if like I'm like a one God kind of guy. You know, I'm just not ready to fully commit. We have commitment issues. At the end of the day, the Achilles heel of our religiosity and spirituality is that we have a problem with commitment. It's not a question of belief. We believe. We're ma'aminim b'nei ma'aminim. We believe. And the truth is, it's not even a problem of practice, because we do really what God asks of us. The problem is, I'm not really ready or willing to commit my heart fully to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's for a whole variety of reasons, because when you commit to someone, just like no different, if a person commits in a marriage, so in order to make that marriage work, they have to be fully vested in that marriage. You know, if a person says, you know what, I'll give it 5 years and I'll see what's going to happen, that is not going to be a marriage that is going to succeed. It's got to be 1,000% or nothing. There's no in between. And it's true with most things in life. If you want to be successful, if you look at very often, most of us have things that we've started and we have not been able to complete. More often than not, if you start something in life and you don't finish it, it's usually because you are not 1,000% vested in it. If you are 1,000% vested in it, most things like that, you can make happen. If it doesn't happen, again, sometimes there are extenuating circumstances, but more often than not, it's because of a lack of commitment. So the Rambam says something so amazing. The Rambam says that it's not just enough to kind of be like casual friends with God. It's not enough to say, I love you, you love me, but we're going to see other people. Rather, again, at the end of the day, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a relationship with God, only works if I'm madly in love with him. And the Rambam purposely uses the metaphor of human love, because hopefully we're all zocha to that. It's something that we could relate to, that a person finds someone else in life with whom they are madly in love, and when they are, so again, their total preoccupation with the other. So the Rambam, after he says all of that, he says, okay, very nice. So I understand how to fall in love with another human being. That I understand. But how do I fall in love with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? With another person, ultimately I could see them, I could perceive them, I could experience them. But how do I fall in love with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So Kutir Rambam writes in number 3. V'heichi adarach la'avaso v'yiraso. So it's actually interesting. So he says, now, how do you translate yira? Okay, so you could tell a lot about a person from the way they translate that word, right? So very often, those with more misnagdisha backgrounds will always go ahead and translate yira as fear, right? Those who perhaps have a little bit more of a Hasidic leaning will always translate it as reverence or awe. Rabbi Yitzhak Gabradishev comments, he says that you can't translate, the Rabbi says you can't translate yira as fear. And he says, why not? He says, because fear is an emotion that separates things. If I am fearful of fire, then by definition, I do not want to get close to it. Says the Rebbe, to fear HaKadosh Baruch Hu means that I'm going to be distant from God. I'm going to be distant from God. The Rebbe therefore says, Yira means awe and reverence. Now, when I revere something, what it means is very often, I can't necessarily just, you know, kind of go over it and put my arm around it and say, hey, what's up? You know, that's not, reverence means I put it on a pedestal. Reverence means I know that it's not always accessible to me. Reverence means that I hold it in very high regard, but I want to be close. I want to be connected. So the Rebbe says, that's what Yira means, and that's what, interestingly enough, that's how the Rambam must understand it as well. Because when the Rambam mentions Ava and Yira in the same, now you would think Ava and Yira are like two opposite emotions. When you love someone or something, by definition, that love ultimately expresses itself in connection. If Yira means fear, then by definition, fear often expresses itself how? In separation. So the Rambam must be saying over something different. Rambam must be saying, how do you come to love and revere God? I love HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I love Him with all of my heart. But I revere Him. I put Him on a pedestal because He's the emotional. So how do I come to that? So look at the Rambam writes. Very simple. B'sha'a she'yisbonein ha'adam b'ma'asav. When a person goes ahead and contemplates God's creations and all the wondrous things that He has created in this world, and he's able to see the wisdom of God that has no measurement, that has no boundaries, when a person, look what the Rambam writes, when a person contemplates the enormity of nature, see, this is a little bit lost on us because Jews traditionally have been urban dwellers, right? Urban dwellers. So for us, you know, I have a tree in my front yard, mommy, it's like the country, right? You know, it's wonderful. You know, so again, we become urban dwellers over the years. But you understand that nature plays a very important role within Judaism. Because the Rambam says, when you see natural beauty, when you see a sunset, you see a sunrise, you see snow-capped mountains. There's a famous story. Rav Kook, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, was stuck in Switzerland over the First World War. He went to Europe to fundraise. He got stuck in Switzerland during World War I. So he said to his thing by a gvir, a wealthy individual in the community, he said to his host one day, he said to the host, I'd like to go see the Alps. I'd like to go see the Alps. The host was a little bit surprised. Like, you're Rav Kook. He was the Rav of Yerushalayim already. What do you need with the Alps? You have Yerushalayim. So there are two different versions of the story. So one version of the story had Rav Kook say to him that after 120, he was nervous that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to ask him, no, Avram Yitzchak, what did you think of my Alps? And the second version of the story is that Rav Kook said, what do you think? That the Ribon Shalom just created the Alps for the Gentiles? You think He just created? You know, we sometimes have this idea, nature, it's Bittelsmann, you know? No, you know, that's for everyone else. For us, you know, it's not true. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a beautiful world. You know, God didn't have to create a beautiful world. If you look outside, you know, we look at snowfall as an inconvenience. But if you look at, like, it's miraculous. If you don't have to drive, it's wonderful, and it's gorgeous, and it's magnificent. And if you could sit and look out your window and see the incredible magnificence of the Ribono Shel Olam's world, why does God need to do that? Because Baruch Hu didn't need to make a beautiful world. Why is every single sunset or every single sunrise so absolutely inspiring? Why do Ribono Shel Olam create different types of topography throughout the world? Why are there deserts and there are jungles and there's lush? Why? Why did He do that? He could have just made the earth one flat plateau, right?
Black and white.
Could have made it so. But He did it because He wants to inspire us with his divinely orchestrated landscape. Because when we see the beauty of nature, I say, my gosh, this little snowfall is just like, it's not even like the tip of the divine pinky. It's one little, less than a percentage point of the Ribono Shel Olam's greatness. And yet, I'm so overwhelmed by it. Says the Rambam, just look at the natural world and you will fall in love with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He goes on, he says, Kimo Sha'amar David, Tzama Nafshi Le'elokim Le'elokim Le'kel Chai, O Kishem Echashim. Okay, fine. So the Rambam then goes on. And I want to show you something very interesting in number four. So now you understand what's happening in this kapitel. So in this kapitel, what David HaMelech is saying is, Ranim Lu Tzadikim Ba'Hashem. How can you experience this almost effervescent joy, this overflowing joy from the inside, where literally I feel that my heart is bursting with love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, connection with God. How can you accomplish that? David HaMelech discusses by beholding God in nature. And in fact, again, the Rambam Maimonides himself takes his cue from David HaMelech and therefore explains in a halachic sense that the way to cultivate a meaningful love with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the way to fall in love with God, it's interesting, the Rambam doesn't write, learn. The Rambam doesn't write, do mitzvos. The Rambam doesn't write, do chesed. Those are all important things. But when the Rambam writes about how to fall in love with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he says, just take time to look and to appreciate the natural world. That's the pathway to love. Once there is love, then everything else comes in afterwards. And in fact, if you look at number four, this is from a wonderful book called Worship of the... It's actually Worship of the Heart, not the heat. But been a little bit cold outside. And in any event, I'm sorry about that. Worship of the Heart. So these are the essays of Rav Soloveitchik on tefillah, on prayer. So the Rav here writes about the different, what he calls mediums, the different connection, the different mediums, the different ways we could connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Remember, as I mentioned before, Rav Soloveitchik was a part of probably one of the greatest, we'll call it, families of Torah nobility within the Jewish people, the Brisker dynasty, the Soloveitchik dynasty. And so the Rav begins by discussing what he calls the intellectual medium. So the intellectual medium says that the way you come close to God is through Talmud Torah, is through learning. Through learning. Remember again, the Medrash itself describes, the beautiful Medrash that says that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Medrash calls the Torah, so the daughter of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So if a person has a daughter, a person knows that a parent is instinctively more protective of a daughter than a parent is of sons. So ultimately, again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls the Torah his daughter. And he reluctantly, lovingly but reluctantly, marries off his daughter to Bnei Yisrael. So therefore, in the first meeting, the Rav explains that intellectually, you want to come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, connect with the Ribono Shel Olam's daughter. Connect with Torah. Torah is the pathway to God. And in fact, understand, that was certainly the Brisker ideology. And understand, until the Baal Shem Tov came along, that was the only way that it was assumed that one could connect with God, is through Torah. So that's great. That's great if you know how to learn. That's great if you possess skills or you possess intellectual acumen. Understand, we live in a very different day and age. Today, even if you can't read a word of Hebrew, right? The person, bless you, a person could learn anything and everything. Baruch Hashem, we have access to everything. But not so long ago again, if a person couldn't learn, a person didn't have skills, so they were stuck. So you had incredible, like, difficulties in the Jewish community that if a person was not of among those who was able to learn, then a relationship with God was considered to be very deficient. It was the Baal Shem Tov who really came along and said, no, there are other pathways that as long as you approach HaKadosh Baruch Hu with a sincere heart, you can connect to God with anything you do. Obviously, Talmud Torah always occupies an elevated state and an elevated stature, but with a sincere heart, you can connect to God with anything. So the Rav piggybacks off that. And the Rav in number four writes about what he calls the emotional medium. So the Rav writes, this is C. I only quote a few part of it over here. Man is also able to approach God through his great passionate love for him, through an ecstatic experience which enables the finite being to transcend the bounds of finitude and rise above the limited and relative heights of absoluteness and endlessness. Man, many Jewish philosophers and mystics maintained, may reach God not only through the intellect, but also through the heart, through a pure and serene mind, however naive and simple, through a passionate sincere, though not intellectually enlightened love, through craving for God, even when the heart which craves has not been illumined by divine knowledge or wisdom, in loneliness and despair, even if the lonely and despairing soul cannot interpret its own misery, or through joy and jubilation, notwithstanding the fact that the heart which is filled with gratitude and happiness is too ignorant to analyze its aroused emotions. One may find access to God in ignorance and intellectual want, as long as he is truthful and his feelings are sincere and genuine. So the Rav really is echoing, although not quoting the Baal Shem Tov, the Rav is essentially echoing that same type of hashkafa, that even if a person does not possess intellect, person doesn't not very wise or not very smart or doesn't have the ability to learn, if one is sincere, one has a sincere heart, one has sincere emotions, one is able to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what's an example of this? Look what he writes, paragraph D. This is so beautiful. The emotional approach to God via the ecstatic leap into the beyond is to be considered a direct beholding of him. There is no need for additional visionary perceptions characteristic of prophecy. The feeling of his presence, companionship, and closeness is vivid and overpowering. So the Rav says that there is a way to feel close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even if a person doesn't have the ability, for whatever the reason, to utilize their intellect. And look at his example. This is one of the most beautiful lines. One feels the breath of infinity in the stillness of a starlit, in the stillness of a clear starlit night, when he simply perceives the great miracle of being in touch with the Creator who resides beyond the endless space of the flying nebula. So in English, what that means is the Rav says, you know, you go outside at night and you see a starlit sky. And the truth is, if you've ever tried it, you know, you just feel close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, could I articulate why I feel that way? No. Can I even articulate what it is that I am feeling? Not really. But if you ask me how I feel in this moment, I just feel close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know, if you go to Tzfat, and you go ahead and you visit in the old cemetery of Tzfat, the graver of Shoma Alkabetz. So Shoma Alkabetz was the composer of Lecha Dodi. And you know, you could go to Davin in the shul, that the Shoma Alkabetz davened in, and where is the fair visit? Where is it? It's on a hilltop. And they say that when Roshoma Alka, and it has doors that walk out, I mean, like literally like onto like a drop. And they say Roshoma Alkabetz in Kabbalah, before he made Kabbalah, Shemei Lechadodi, they would go outside. They wouldn't daven inside the shul. They would go outside. He composed Lechadodi on that ledge overlooking the mountains of Tzfat, because there are certain things that you cannot go ahead and experience inside the four walls of a building, no matter how beautiful those walls may be. There are certain things that could only be experienced when you connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the intermediary of the natural world. And again, that's why you see the Baal Shem Tov, Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, spent incredible amounts of time in isolation, in the forest by themselves. By Breslov, that's still a thing even to today, about spending time, spodidus, right, alone in the forest. There is this idea, and the Rav is saying, this is called the emotional medium. Is it intellectual? No. Can a person articulate what it is that's happening over here? Not necessarily. But it is so meaningful and profound because a person has the opportunity to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu through, again, the framework of the physical universe that God himself created for the purpose of connection. Because why else did HaKadosh Baruch Hu make it so beautiful if not for us to see his Alps, right? Why else did HaKadosh Baruch Hu make it so beautiful if not for us to connect with him through the beauty of his natural universe? So to bring this all together, according to what we're seeing over here, this is what David HaMelech is describing in this particular kapitel. Ranenu tzadikim b'Hashem. The greatest state in life is ranan, is ranenu. It's to feel such a sense of almost like uncontainable, unbridled joy. When will I feel that? Not when I'm davening to Hashem, not El Hashem, but rather when? Bahashem, when I experience God. And when do I experience God? So David HaMelech himself says, Bidvar Hashem Shamayim Nasu, Konis Kadein Mehayam, when I experience nature. Rambam says again, how do you come to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Again, it's not through initially. The first step is not through learning, and the first step is not through mitzvos, it's not through chesed. The first step is behold the natural world of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Writes the Rav, there are many different mediums. And Rav Soloveitchik disagrees with the Rambam a little bit, because the Rambam seems to say the only starting point is to behold the natural world. The Rav says not necessarily. There are many, for some people, the way to create a relationship with God might be through the intellectual medium. Some people are very intellectual. So for them, Talmud Torah might be the springboard. It could very well be. For many people, it is like that. But for many people, it's not like that. And just understand that that emotional medium, that ability to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu through feeling such a sense of love and awesomeness about God through beholding his natural universe is no less pure, is no less holy, is no less meaningful than perceiving God through the intellect. Yes?
I'm just wondering if that isn't also following the way the potential really starts. It starts by saying, first of all, that he's calling them tzaddikim, and then he repeats the idea of tzedek and mishpat. Could it be that it's also the intellectual way, like this, that Levin and Elfa say there are two ways to approach it? Because at the beginning, that is what he says. He says, Ki Ashar Bar Hashem, Homa Seo Ber Muna.
Beautiful. Absolutely. There is that balance between the intellect and the emotion. It's a beautiful idea. Absolutely. I didn't think about that, but that is really, it's a great observation. It's a great observation. Right. Both possibilities. Both mediums. It is true. Take a look at number five. So now, you mentioned tzaddikim and tzedek. So now I want to focus just on one. So now that we have a little bit of the kind of like the construct. Now again, remember, no one's really telling us as to what's happening in David HaMelech's life that prompted him to write this kapitel. It sounds like based on the upbeat nature of the kapitel that everything was going well, which would seem to indicate that when did he write this in his lifetime? It's hard to know. Maybe like a week before he died. I don't know. Like, you know. So remember, there is a certain period of time between the time that David HaMelech essentially retires from the army, which is not so long before his death, until the last few days of David HaMelech's life were turbulent because there was another rebellion by his son Adonio. So there was another. So David HaMelech's last days were once again filled with familial turbulence, but it seems to me that there was a period of tranquility between the time that, like I said, he retired. Remember, when I say retired, his generals forced him to stop going out to battle because he was almost killed in one of the battles with the Plishtim. So it sounds like between that time that he retired and between the time that he became very ill, was bedridden, and had the whole rebellion of Adonio ben Chagias, since there was some period of tranquility over that. I don't know how, it must have been a very short amount of time, but it sounds like, or it could be that there were some other pockets of tranquility in his life that maybe he wrote this. In any event, what we've seen so far is that this is really reflective of almost like a hashkafas achayim. David HaMelech is saying, I want to tell you how, and by the way, there's one other piece, I forgot to mention this before. This fits in very beautifully with the Davidic personality as well, because remember, what did David HaMelech do in his previous life before he became king? He was a shepherd. When you are a shepherd, you spend plenty of time where? Outside. So the fact that David HaMelech is telling us that my initial love of God came from a love of nature comes as no surprise, fits, meaning, had he grown up in the palace, I'd say, okay, where did that love of nature come from? But the fact that he was a shepherd in his young years, and remember, we saw 2 years ago, remember, right? We saw 2 years ago in Kapitel Chav Gimel, Mizmor LaDavid Hashem Roi Lo Echsar, that David always pined for those shepherding days. That was always a time in his life that he, if you asked him what was the best part of his life, the best part was in his youth when he was a shepherd. Before, he did not enjoy the monarchy. So the fact that he's saying, when did I fall in love with God? I fell in love with God when I was out in the fields. I fell in love with God when I was out shepherding. I did not fall in love with God in the palace, because the palace didn't offer me too many opportunities to forge a love-filled relationship. Yes?
You may have touched on this previously, but how is Sefer Tehillim organized?
It's not. It's not organized. I'm not sure exactly who even actually put together, who decided the order in Sefer Tehillim. But it is not. It's certainly not organized thematically.
Right.
It's not organized thematically. It's not organized chronologically. Now, I have a thought as to why that is. I think that's done intentionally, because I think the beauty of Sefer Tehillim is you can go from one kapitel of incredible turbulence to another kapitel of incredible tranquility, and the truth is, that is the metaphor for life. Meaning, had there been a progression, let's do all the happy stuff in the beginning, turbulent stuff in the end, you know, maybe a little sprinkling of simcha, a little singing, so that's not life. Sefer Tehillim is life. So life is all about last week, things were horrific, quite literally and metaphorically, and this week, Ranenu Tzadikim Bashem. That's how life is.
So could he have written this when he was a shepherd?
I don't know. I don't know. Again, the only way, there are very few things I know on my own, right? Most things I know from my wife, right? And then there are a few other things. But again, whenever we speak about the chronological context, that always comes from the Mefarshim on the capital, and no one says anything over here. So I don't know. Maybe somebody somewhere says something, but I didn't find anything. Take a look at number 5. So let me show you the Malbim. So the Malbim here says something amazing. The Malbim writes, 5 Aleph, Ranenu, Hamizmor Hazen is Chaber Ala Inyan Arishon. So the Malbim writes, first of all, and this is very interesting because, and this goes to your point that you just made, which is, remember, there need not be a connection between one capital and the next. I mean, it doesn't have to be a connection between Lamed Beis and Lamed Gimel, Lamed Aleph and Lamed Beis. Here the Malbim happens to write that there is a connection between these capitlach. Hamizmor Hazen is Chaber Ala Inyan Arishon. He says this capital is connected to the previous one. Ba'erbo, ki Hashem maniges olamo b'shnei minei hanhagos. Sheitiv is actually, skip down a little bit. Go to paragraph Beis. Ranenu. So he writes over here, David HaMelech begins this capital, Ranenu, sing joyously, which of course we mean it means more than that. Sing with a heart filled with incredible, overflowing joy. So he writes, Hinei b'sim ha-mizmar ha-kodem. You know, the previous capital had at the end, Amar, simchu ba-Hashem, Gilud Sadikim Vaharninu Kol Yishrelev. So if you keep your finger on the place in 5 days and skip down to 6 for just a moment. So I quoted for you over here. So this is the last pasuk of the previous capital. So the last part of the previous capital says, Simchu Bahashem, rejoice in Hashem, Vigilu, and exalt Sadikim, the righteous ones. Vaharninu Kol Yishrelev, and sing joyously. All you upright of heart. So what's interesting over here is you see something fascinating. First of all, it says Tzadikim and Yishrei Lev in the last capital. And it says what? In Pasuk Aleph of this capital, Tzadikim and Yishrei Lev over here. Number two, in the previous capital, it says Harninu, which is the same shorish as what? As Ranenu. So writes the Malbim something very interesting. Ki Yisharim Heim Madrega Yoser Gedol Min HaTzadikim. So now what the Malbim is focusing on is David HaMelech refers to two different groups of people, both in the last pasuk of Lamed Beis and the first pasuk in Lamed Gimel. Who are the two groups of people? Tzadikim and Yisharim, which literally we would translate as the righteous and the upright. So the Malbim writes the following. He says Ki Yisharim Heim Madrega Yoser Gedol Min HaTzadikim. So the Malbim writes that Yisharim are even a greater level than tzaddikim. How so? Shehim libam v'sichlam holech yasher, ve'eino mistapek klal, ve'eino nota klal midarchei Hashem. So he says, to be a yasher, to be yishrei lev, to be upstanding individuals, what does that mean? It means that their heart and their intellect always go on the straight path. They do not veer or have doubts at all, and they never veer off the pathway of God. This is even a higher level than tzaddikim. The tzaddikim do good things, but they still wage the internal battles. The battle of the intellect. So the tzaddikim wage battles in terms of their emunah, in terms of their belief. And they wage the battles of their yetzer with different actions. Al kain siva shat tzadikim yismuchu b'leiv umosif liyisham shiranu b'poel. So this is very interesting. So now, what the Malbim is giving us is something very important, which is a definition. So according to the Malbim, we have tzadikim and yisharim. Tzadikim ultimately are individuals who are behaviorally righteous, individuals who do the right thing, but they still struggle internally. They struggle intellectually with matters of emunah, and they struggle emotionally and desire-wise with the pushes and pulls of man's desires. So again, the yisharim means that literally their yeshua, they're upright. Everything about them is upright, not just their actions, but their intellect and their heart as well. Tzadikim are behaviorally righteous, but still have the internal struggles. So therefore, it says refers to something very interesting. He says, Al kein tziva, shahat tzadikim yismuchu b'leiv, Umosif the Yishem Shiraninu Bapoal. Therefore, again, Umemizmor Zesh, Shivar Meshkachas, Hashem, Apothis Moses, the Gim Sheavol, Madrikas, Ayisharim, Virandu Bashem, Ulishon. So, what he points out over here is something very interesting, which is that we're not going to get into this now, but at the end of Lamed Beis, it says, Simchu Bashem, Vigilu Tzadikim, Vaharninu Kol Yishrei Leif. In this one, it says, Raninu Tzadikim. So Rav Hirsch just points out that the goal of the tzaddik is to become the yashar, and the goal of the yashar is to become the tzaddik. What does that mean? Let me explain that the goal of the tzaddik to become a yashar, that I understand, that the tzaddik has to try to become internally righteous as well. The goal of the yashar is not just to be righteous on the inside, but what? To allow that righteousness to come out through tzaddik-like behavioral activity. So we're not going to focus on how the Malbim reads it into the pasuk. What I'm more interested for today's purposes is our definitions, because what the Malbim gives us now is something really amazing. That there is this person called the tzaddik, which is interesting because we often use these phrases a little bit differently. So according to the Malbim, the tzaddik is someone who again is behaviorally righteous, but still struggles internally, and that struggle manifests itself on two levels: struggles with emuna, my intellect, and struggles with my typhus, with my desire. It's just doing the right thing or falling prey to sin. So that's the tzaddik. The yasher, totally upright. My intellect is solid with God. My heart and my emotion is solid with God. And again, even my behaviors are solid with God. Now, I want to show you something very interesting. Take a look at number 7. Comes along Rav Hirsch, and Rav Hirsch disagrees. Rav Hirsch writes, he says, the inference to be drawn from all the foregoing then is as follows. Now, this is Rav Hirsch from last week's capital, Lamed Beis. So he says, the tzaddikim, who have never wavered in their loyalty to duty, of course, have the greatest cause for rejoicing. But even those who are Yishrei Lev need not cease being of good cheer. They are the ones whom it is said in verse 2, Ve'ein baruchu remiyah, they do not engage in self-deception, and if they have erred, they understand and admit it in honesty and uprightness that they have sinned. So Rav Hirsch understands this a little bit differently. Rav Hirsch reverses it. Rav Hirsch says the tzaddik is the highest level. The tzaddik is the highest level. And what? And who is the yashar leiv? The yashar leiv is someone who might sin. But at least what? Their yashar means what? They're honest. You know, the greatest challenge we have in life is not that we sin. Of course we sin, we're human beings, we're frail, we make mistakes. The greatest challenge we have is admitting that we've done something wrong. Because what happens more often than not is, you know, what happens? I do something wrong. The truth is the first reaction is remorse. But then as time goes on, what occurs? Rationalization. Right? It wasn't so bad. She deserved it. Right? Whatever. However we go ahead and we rationalize it. And the truth is, enough rationalization, I actually feel good about what I did. I actually did the right thing. So I've gone now from feeling bad about what I realized was something very wrong to rationalizing. So Rav Hirsch explains, the tzaddik is someone who does not waver in their commitment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? Never wavered in their loyalty to duty. The Yishrei Lev waver. The Yishrei Lev makes mistakes, but they have uprightness of heart, that they don't engage in self-deception. When they do something wrong, they acknowledge it was wrong, they own their mistakes, and they try to do their best to engage in course-correcting activity. So just pointing out over here, two dramatically different interpretations. According to the Malbim, again, the Yishrei Lev is the highest level, never wavering from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Their intellect is with God, emotions are with God, and actions are with God. The tzaddikim, actions are righteous, but again, they still are plagued by doubt with their emuna, or ultimately, again, still struggling with the yetzer hara. Yes?
So, I understand the verb, like the words, how the last verse almost gets on the theme, but what's the thematic
connection? Meaning in this capital. Oh, we're going to get to it. So the truth is, I'm not going to get into that too much right now. So according to the Malbim says that essentially the two kapitlach are connected, at least for the tzaddik and yashar, to tell us that each one must learn from the other. The tzaddik must learn from the yashar, ultimately, again, how to get his intellect and heart with God. And the yashar must learn from the tzaddik how to be proficient in his spiritual activity as well. So that's according to the Malbim. Now the Malbim goes on, Rav Hirsch both go on. I'm not focusing on it right now. Maybe next week I'll spend a little bit more time connecting it. Right now I just want to give you the definitions. So now I want to point out something else. So now go back for one moment just to number 1. So now here's what we have over here. Let's see how this pasuk plays out differently according to both opinions. Ra'anu tzadikim ba'Hashem, la yisharim nahava sihila. So what happens? So sing joyously. So again, remember, if you go with the Malbim, or let's say differently, if you go with the Malbim, so then again, what David HaMelech is saying over here is the tzaddikim should call out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in incredible renun, in this incredible heart filled with joy, and Yisharim also na'avas sehila. The Yisharim also should go ahead and, what's the English over here, should offer praise. That's according to the Malbim, thank you. And then according to Rav Hirsch, again, so the kapitel is beginning with the most righteous, Ra'anu tzaddikim ba'Hashem, and also La Yisharim na'ava sehila. Now I want to show you something very interesting. So again, I'm just pointing out that David HaMelech is speaking to both kinds of people. And what he seems to be saying to us over here is the following. What's the message that's being given to us then in this opening part of the kapitel? Now remember, let's trace this back. Oh, so let's trace this back for just a moment. Let's trace this back. So remember, how did we start today? We started by saying, Ra'anu tzaddikim ba'Hashem means what? Ra'anu means what? A heart filled with incredible overflowing joy. When does a person have that sense of incredible overflowing joy? When? Only when, not El Hashem, but only when? When it's ba'Hashem. I have to connect with God. So we discussed again, how does one connect with God? Through nature, through all different ways. I'm not spelling out nature over here, perhaps even a little bit of a combination between the intellect and between the emotion. What David HaMelech is conveying over here is something so incredibly important. Namely what? You don't have to be perfect in order to have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I can't tell you how many people walk around thinking that they can't have a relationship with God because they simply don't measure up. That is unequivocally false. That is unequivocally sheker. You could have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu no matter where you are holding in life. And David HaMelech creates that contrast. Ra'anu tzaddikim ba'Hashem. Let's go right now with Rav Hirsch. So who are the tzaddikim? The tzaddikim are the perfect ones. So again, right? I understand the tzaddikim, of course, have hearts that are overflowed with joy for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But yet, what does HaMelech add in there? What else does he add in? This is the second part. La Yisharim na'ava sehila. But the Yisharim also have the ability to offer praise. Who are the Yisharim, according to Rav Hirsch? Who are the Yisharim? Right? The Yisharim are the regular people who make mistakes, tons of mistakes. But at least it's okay. At least they have an incredible midah that they acknowledge their mistakes. All the Kodesh Baruch Hu needs, the only prerequisite to relationship with God, there's only one prerequisite. What's the one prerequisite for relationship with God? What's the one prerequisite for almost every single meaningful life relationship? Honesty. If there is no honesty, that's why if you look even in human relationships, the one thing that when it's damaged is very difficult to repair is honesty. When there's been a breach in honesty, there are many other forgivable offenses in our life relationships. When you've breached honesty, that is the most difficult thing to build back up. So David HaMelech is saying, yes, of course, tzaddikim, ra'anu tzaddikim ba'Hashem. But even if you're a yasher, even if you're a sinner, even if you're really not happy with who you are, with what you are, even if you know you're not doing what's right, as long as I'm honest with myself, la'yisharim na'ava sehila. The Ribono Shel Olam wants a relationship with me as well. And I want to just take this one step further with the last couple of minutes we have. If you look at number 9 on your sheet, so we're not going to do this whole thing here. I just want to quote this to you. This is from the Netziv. So the Netziv, Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, was one of the Rashi Yeshiva of Valozhin. So he wrote a parish on the Chumash called the Emek Dover, and he has an introduction to that parish. And in it, he says the following. He says, "Hazeh Sefer Nikra Sefer Bereishis, Nikra Befi Anaviim Sefer HaYosher." So the Book of Bereishis is called by the prophets the Book of the Upright. This is Sefer HaYosher. Kedisim Sechas Avodas Kochavim Ashne Mikra Sefer Yoshua. Haluksuva Sefer Yashar, Sefer Shmuel, Vayomer Lelame Bnei Yehuda Kesh, Sine Ksuva Sefer Yashar, Wafarish Rabbi Yochanan, Zes Sefer Avram Yitzchak Vyakov, Shinikru Yesharim. And he quotes over here Rabbi Yochanan, who says that Sefer Bereishis is called Sefer HaYashar because it is the book of the Yesharim. Who are the Yesharim? Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov, Shinemar, Tomos Navshi Mos Yesharim, Vieshlahavin, Hatam Lama Kara Bilam, as Avosinu B'Shem Yesharim Beichod, Velo Tzadikim O Chasidim Uchadome. So he points out over here that when Bilam the Gentile prophet, refers to the patriarchs and matriarchs. He calls them the Yesharim. Why does he call them Yesharim? Right? Why doesn't he call them tzaddikim, righteous? And look what he writes. He says, "V'gam lama mechuna ze ha-sefer biyuchad bekinu yesharim." Why is it? Why is Sefer Bereishis called? So now what we're saying over here is that the book of Bereishis is also called Sefer HaYesharim or Sefer HaYashar, the book of the ones who are upright. And it's a reference to the fact that the book of Bereishis is primarily about the patriarchs and matriarchs, and they are known as Yesharim. They're known as Yesharim. So he calls it Bilam. Bilam called, that's quoted in the Gemara Maseches Avodah Zarah and in Shmuel Beis. He quotes two psukim, one from Sefer Yoshua and one from Sefer Shmuel. So why is it called Sefer Yesharim? So skip down to paragraph B. Again, I would urge you, learn this on your own, because the truth is it's a beautiful piece. I'm not doing it justice, but just because of time, I want to give you a little bit of it. So he writes in paragraph B. He says, "Vizeh." You want to know why it's called Sefer Yesharim, or why the Avos are called Yesharim? Vizeh ha-yashavach ha-avos. Shemilvad tzaddikim v'chassidim. Shemilvad shahayu tzaddikim v'chassidim v'ave Hashem b'ofer Yosef Asher. Besides the fact that they were righteous and they were pious and they loved God to the best of their ability, old hayu yesharim. They were also upright. What does that mean? Haynu shehisnagnu im umos ha'olam afilu ovde elilim michu'arim. Because the righteousness of the patriarchs and matriarchs was not just limited to their own, was not just limited to their family. They exhibited a concern for greater humanity. They cared about the world. Mikol makom hayu imam bi'ava v'chashlu tavasam ba'asher hi kiyum habriya. Kimo shan roam b'ma kamo hishtateach adam avinu l'spala al sdom. Af agav shahaya sonei. So again, he gives multiple examples. Avram Avinu davens for stone. Why did Avram Avinu daven for stone? Stone was the antithesis of Abrahamic ideology. It was the antithesis of Abrahamic chesed. Why is he daven for them? Because Avram cared about the greater world. Avram just didn't care about the monotheists. He didn't just care about his family. He didn't just care about the people who believed like him, who looked like him, who practiced like him. He cared about all of humanity. And he goes on, skip down a little bit. He says by paragraph, see, v'ainu mamish ka'av hamon goyim af agav she'ina bein holab mesharim. Fine. He goes on. He gives different examples of Yitzchak Avinu with Avimelech, Yaakov Avinu, even with Shechem. And therefore, he says at the end of the day, it's called Sefer Yesharim. Why? Because ultimately, the theme, one of the major lessons of the book of Bereishis, is that to be a child of Avraham Avinu means that I don't just care about myself or about my family or not even just care about the Jewish people. To be a son of Avraham Avinu, to be a daughter of Av Sarah Imenu, you have to be someone who cares about the world. That's what it means to be a Yashar. There are tzaddikim. Tzaddikim is a reference, is descriptive about how I feel about God, how God feels about me. A Yashar means a person who is so upright that they care about the entire world. They care about humanity. What happens in the world matters to me, and I want to affect change, not just in my community or even just in my nation, but I want to try to affect change within the greater world as well. Now, perhaps there's another reason as well why Sefer Bereishis is called Sefer Yesharim, why the Avos and Imos are called Yesharim. If we borrow Rav Hirsch's definition, so what's a yasher? What's a yasher? Someone who makes mistakes. Now, I'll say something I don't think is controversial, but, you know, the Torah goes out of its way to tell us about all of the mistakes of the Avos and Imos. You know, if the Torah was interested in deification of the matriarchs and patriarchs, the Torah could have not said certain things. The Torah did not have to tell us how Sarai Imenu mistreated Hagar. Torah could have just simply left that detail out, but the Torah doesn't. And in fact, the Medrash says that because Sarai Imenu mistreated Hagar, therefore the children of Hagar antagonize us to this very day, which we see unfortunately with our own eyes and our own broken hearts. Avraham Avinu went down to Mitzrayim. The Ramban says, big mistake, he shouldn't have gone down to Egypt because by doing so, he put his wife in peril. Torah doesn't, just skip that entire story. You don't need to tell it to us. Yitzchak Avinu, Rivka Imenu. Did Rivka do the right thing by telling Yaakov? Did Rachel do the right thing? This week's parasha. Did Rachel do the right thing by going ahead and giving her sister the simanim and having her sister marry Yaakov? Did she do the right thing? So we work backwards. The answer would seem to be yes. Yeah? Except if you're Yaakov Avinu. Right? If you're Yaakov Avinu, you're not very appreciative of the incredible righteousness that Rachel has. I'm so happy you care about your sister's feelings. That's great. Just understand now that I ended up marrying a woman who I did not marry, and by the way, which literally consigned Leah Imenu to a lifetime of misery. Leah Imenu has a terrible, terrible marriage, and by extension has a terrible, depressing, and sad existence. Was it right? Was it wrong? It seems like it worked out because Baruch Hashem, we're here to this day. Yaakov Avinu goes in and complains to Paro about the difficulty of his life. Again, the Torah goes out of its way multiple times not to cover up the shortcomings of the Avos and the Imos, but goes to tell us about them. Why? Why does the Torah do that? Why does the Torah do that? Because otherwise, they're not role models. Because otherwise, if Avram Avinu is perfect, I have nothing to learn from him because I am far from perfect. If Rachel Imenu is the paradigm of perfection, the paradigm of piety, with absolutely no shortcomings, then she is not a role model for any of you because I'm sure you're all wonderful ladies. But I would have a hunch to say that nobody here is perfect. The Torah goes out of its way to highlight the imperfections of the Avos and the Imos in order to go ahead and make them real. Why is it called Sefer Yesharim? Why is, if we borrow a verse, because why? To teach us the David HaMelech lesson. Ranenu tzadikim b'Hashem. Absolutely. The tzaddik could always have a beautiful relationship with God. That's not a question. We all know that. But you know what's even better than the tzaddik having a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? La Yesharim na'avo sehila. That no matter how imperfect I may be, no matter how damaged I may be, no matter how compromised I may be because of things that I have done or decisions that I have made, there's wonderful news. La Yesharim, even for those who are Yashar, the only thing I have to do is I have to be honest with what I am and what I'm not. As long as I'm a Yashar, as long as I'm honest, at the end of the day, Na'ava Sehila. The Ribono Shel Olam is waiting for me. The Ribono Shel Olam desires me. The Ribono Shel Olam is more than happy to have a relationship with me. The only thing he requests is just a little bit of honesty. So what comes out over here, if we bring this all together, and with this we'll conclude, is something truly beautiful. So we have over here, just in the opening pasuk of this kapitel, David HaMelech teaching us the idea that one needs to fall in love with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not just good enough to be friends. It's not just good enough to say, I'd like to see other people. We have to find a way to become committed and to become madly in love with the Ribono Shel Olam. You know, we use the word love in such like, it's become so germane and so overused, right? Because people say, oh, I love that dress. Really? I'm saying it's really nice, but do you love it? Right? I love football. I love pizza. I love this. And those same terms are the ones we used to say. I love pizza and I love my wife, right? I love that dress and I love the children. Hey, so what David HaMelech is saying is we've forgotten a little bit what love really is. And our job, the pinnacle of spiritual accomplishment is to fall madly in love, passionately in love with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How do I do that? David HaMelech gives us, we'll see more strategies next week, but at least for this week, David HaMelech says, just enjoy nature. Enjoy and appreciate the beautiful that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has created. And then at the end of the day, you will fall in love. Yes, like any relationship, falling in love, right? Falling in love is one very little part of a relationship. It's very important because often it's the spark that gets the relationship started. But then to nurture and to foster and to grow that relationship requires a lot of hard work. So it's nice to fall in love with God. That's the first part. Then the details come in about how to nurture and to nourish that love. But David HaMelech also teaches us something else. That the truth is, again, although we all pine to be tzaddikim, we all pine to be those kind of people who not just engage in righteous activity, but that our intellect is solidly with God. We have no questions about emunah. That ultimately our hearts, our desires are aligned with our Kadosh Baruch Hu wants. So hopefully some of us are there, but many of us are not. Many of us are just simply trying to be Yesharim. We're trying to emulate the Avos and Imos. We're trying to be great while at the same time recognizing our human frailties. And David HaMelech says, wonderful. Because Ranan the Tzadikim Bashem, the righteous, of course, always have a place by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the greatest news is that the righteous have not cornered the market on God. That the righteous do not have a monopoly on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That the Ribono Shel Olam is available and accessible to all of us. As long as I am a Yashar, I could be imperfect, broken, handicapped in so many different ways. But as long as I am honest, Na'ava Sehila. The Ribono Shel Olam is waiting for the dialogue. The Ribono Shel Olam is waiting for the connection. All right, we'll stop over here for today. We'll continue with this kapitel next week.